Hello and welcome to a football podcast. My name is Devang Desai and I'm joined by the usual suspects, David Goss and Nick Andrade. On this week's show, we chat TFC and Columbus pulling through big wins, the Galaxy staying alive, Arsenal finally winning at Old Trafford, and of course, it's your questions from the Ask AFP mailbag. Gentlemen, pretty big day in the United States. David, how are you feeling?
Miserable. Absolutely miserable. This is one of the worst feelings I've ever had. It's probably going to last for 3 months, but maybe 4 years, maybe less. So I hope anyone out there who is American, who listens, voted. I don't know that we're allowed to condone specific candidates, but if you voted for the one who's racist, then I don't support the one you voted for. But I'll leave that up to your own discretion. So does that work?
It works. It works. I'm fully endorsing not voting for Donald Trump. So please, God, do not do that. Agreed. I don't know if we can endorse this, but we just have. I was reminiscing because 4 years ago, I had just moved to Vancouver and I remember exactly where I was watching those results. And obviously things going the way they did. But I think I found the one place in Vancouver where certain people were happy with the way it went. So it was a very traumatic event all around. Hopefully this doesn't go the same way.
I can counter that story, by the way. 2008, I was living in England at Oxford and I went to go buy a bottle of champagne to go watch some election stuff. Cause you know, time zones, whatever. And the liquor store was sold out of champagne in Oxford, England. And I was like, is there something going on? And he was like, it's the election. Like he was telling me clearly I knew, but I didn't know that that's why British people would buy champagne. People were so jacked about Obama that parties and stuff. And I was like, okay, that's cool.
So to add to the sadness of 2016, so I was staying at an Airbnb while I was finding a place to live because I just moved to Vancouver. So I was in like a basement apartment. It was really dark and they had a TV, but it was one of like the older, you know, like an older 19-20 inch TV, like it's color, but it's seen better days. So I'm watching Trump like making a speech and like just it's like a surreal moment where I'm in this dark basement halfway across the country, like the first week being like, okay, this is an ominous beginning. Yeah.
And now you're back in Toronto.
Now I'm back in Toronto for phase two of this. But I mean, the circumstances are, of course, way different. Nick, did you have a good weekend? Did you watch a lot of football?
I watched a lot of football. I watched Arsenal beat Man United, which was, I don't know how you're not celebrating more right now, Devang.
Man, I went too hard on Sunday. Sunday was one of the great days. Nick made fun of me for saying it was one of the greatest sports days of my life. But
no,
it was up there.
No.
I call it the greatest.
You said it was the greatest sports day in your life. You did not say one of. You said it was.
Recency bias. Okay. There's... Wow. Am I at The Hague? Is this the ICC? Is this what is the charge?
The ICC, the International Champions Cup, played across the United States and Singapore.
See you in Miami for Atletico. Yeah.
El Clásico.
Jeez.
So Devang, I wanted to ask, what's your number one team?
It's really close because I think it was probably between Bills and Arsenal. I feel like it's up there.
So what championship would mean the most to you? Champions League, Premier League, or Super Bowl?
Oh, wow.
It's got to be Champions League, no?
Like for me, if the Knicks won the NBA Finals, that's it. That's the only thing that matters. And the U.S. winning the World Cup. But I think national teams are different.
See, but it's funny because I think I'd take the Leafs winning the cup in any of this hypothetical. Oh, and I didn't even list the Leafs as one of my favorite because it's really tight. But I think it's because of the, like, I consider these Toronto teams, like, just automatically sewn to me beyond an extension. Whereas Buffalo and Arsenal in London, like, I've had to make an extended effort to kind of continue that bond. So I feel like I'm riding high and low with every result, whereas my local teams, I can't leave. Like I'm bound by this death contract, for better or for worse.
I needed to check Arsenal Fan TV yesterday to see how they were doing, and I know you don't like them, Devang, but their celebration when they scored was the greatest thing. Just go, they have a live stream, just go and go to when they score, and it is the most hilarious thing. I just couldn't stop laughing.
I think I've eased my dislike of AFTV. Like I get it, and clearly that there's a market for it, and it's just not my cup of tea. But I will I I've kind of done some, basically everyone is telling you how to be a fan at all times, and I feel like the less I do of that, the better off I will be, just for my own sanity, because who cares, right? Like, who cares in the end, as long as you're not hurting anyone, which unfortunately I feel like it's sometimes, who knows, right? It's Twitter and no one cares. Like, you search any player's name at any point during a match, if they're having a bad one, like a couple players did yesterday, and it's like, yeah, okay, they're being roasted beyond belief. Makes you think, right?
I was on Reddit earlier today or yesterday, and someone posted like something on the soccer Reddit, and they were like, something about someone saying something anonymous. And then the first comment was, this is why I love Reddit. Like, I smoke managers. I don't know anything about soccer. And I was like, at least you know what you do. Beautiful. That's a level of respect, I guess.
That's the real beautiful game, in my opinion.
For sure.
Folks, we're on Patreon. We're trying to get to 30. Once we do get there, more interviews planned to be released, like the ones we did earlier this year with Jimmy Conrad and Jonathan Osorio. You can also get this show ad-free when you join us on Patreon and join the Discord, where I was going nuts for multiple reasons on Sunday because it was a good sports day, and I have no regrets, Nick. Jeez.
Hey, I'm just saying, you got to aim higher. That's all I'm saying. Aim higher.
I'm going to live my life, Doc. And I'm gonna
Devang, I'm not a rings culture guy, so I respect what you're doing.
I was close there. I almost heard a Z at the end of that. I was worried because people with rings put the Z on there. But I'm glad. I'm glad you kept it with the S. Head over to patreon.com/afootballpodcast and join us today, ad free. Join us on the Discord, and of course, more cool interviews. After the break, it's the headlines on AFP. Welcome back to AFP. Let's get into the headlines, Nick.
Well, Devang, we're going to start again with the best sports day ever, according to Devang. Arsenal beating Man United. But we're going to go and talk about Man United's side.
Wait. You can't do this, Nick. You can't do this to Devang. Let him celebrate first, then we can talk about the other team.
Okay, fine. You know what? Let's just go straight in. Arsenal, boom, go.
Devang, let me give you this to start on. Thomas Partey, 3 weeks into being a Premier League player, was the best player on the field in a Man U Arsenal game already. The guy's a legend. It's always a party with Thomas Partey.
He looked like a unicorn out there. honestly, there, you know when you watch a player sometimes and you just laugh maybe out of disbelief? And I think that happened a couple of times just watching him as well. But I think maybe the most promising development, that partnership with Mohamed Elneny, could be something going forward in quote-unquote big games where maybe Mikel Arteta isn't super comfortable with that Partey-Granit-Xhaka combination that they used against Leicester. So amazing. Hey, Gabriel as well was massive. There's a spine there at Arsenal now. There's an actual spine. Haven't had that in ages. Huge result. Man United, I mean, a lot of players, no real system. They played a diamond, didn't really work. Their fullbacks didn't really do anything when you kind of have to have them do something in a diamond. Ollie's not the guy. You've said it again and again. Heard some of their legends after this match, Keane and Neville, kind of just be like, okay, we know. But until they make a decision, I don't know what we have to talk about, right? Like, he's clearly not the guy.
Yeah, but then he goes and wins 5-0 in Champions League midweek and you can't fire him.
Keane was like, ah, who cares, champions, like, RB Leipzig's a good club, but he's right, the intensity, weirdly, with no fans, which Ollie referenced as well, like, this is still a big game, right, and the intensity level of the Premier League game was clearly different than the UCL.
Yeah, which could be the reaction to it. I think there's still a space where you're not getting the best out of Pogba when Fernandes is on the field, and you're not getting the best of Fernandes right now, where last year it didn't matter, right? Fernandes was playing at such a high level and Pogba was sort of figuring it out and that was good enough. Now Fernandes has sort of taken a step back. I think this was always going to happen because the level he was playing at was unsustainable. Greenwood as well. So like now you're not getting these moments of brilliance from guys. And then you start to look at the structure, because if they can't win it individually on their own, now you're saying, well, what's the coach doing to help them get there? And I think that's where it's really starting to fall and make it obvious on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer that he doesn't really seem to get better from people. He doesn't make guys' lives easier. I don't love the diamond. I do think that Fred is the best option in central midfield for them. And I understand McTominay I think he covers a decent amount of ground and does some good stuff. Like, you know, I don't dislike any player that was put into this game. But
Pogba should not have started. And I think...
You think so?
No, he should... On merit, he probably should not have started, I don't think. And the tough decisions that those legends were referencing and fans of Manchester United are referencing is that... I don't think he should have played in that game with Bruno because it didn't work out well the last time either.
But if Paul Pogba is at Man U, he has to play. Not just the money you spent on him, the talent he is. He's a world-class player. He is in a tier on his own when he's good.
If you're not getting that tier, though, like I feel like the consistency is just not there anymore or at this point where they have six or seven guys that they can play in that midfield now. And if Pogba was giving you 70%, he says that he made that decision to foul Bellerin because he was maybe tired, he was out of breath.
Yeah.
And he regrets it. I'm like, you can't. I admire just being so open about this. I like it.
But right.
On the surface level, like, really, man? Like, there's other options here he has, but it's a tough decision to make, and I'm not sure he's willing to make it. But I see what you're saying. Like, it's a huge move to make, but...
But for this team to be the team they can be, he has to be on the field or he has to be at a different team. And so if he's in the side or if he's on the club, he has to be on the field.
8 weeks till January, my friend. It's not that far.
And he goes where? Real Madrid?
I don't know. I don't think they're probably nowhere, right? That won't be feasible. But
yeah, so I thought this was a bad day for United. We've seen a lot of them. And I think that's the other part is like the level of frustration. It happens once, it happens twice. This is now like the fifth time they've been in chaos since he's been officially announced manager. And you only have so much of a rope. And Mauricio Pochettino was on TV before the Leicester Leeds game on Monday doing punditry and was like, I love England. I love being here. That's your guy. He is an elite coach. He can coach for style and for results. He has done it at the Man U level. He's your coach. So you cannot let him go sign with another team. So that, to me, is the angle that Man U has to have, which is we have to make a move before he's off the market.
Before David yells at me again for the next question, Tottenham moved to second place in the Premier League. That's, of course, if Leicester drop points tonight. But Gareth Bale, he scores the game winner. Do you guys think that Tottenham's a strong title contender right now?
I do. I think they'll be in the conversation throughout the season. Give credit where it's due. I think Jose Mourinho, he's in this next phase of his career now where he's referencing Safari and like making weird social media posts that like, I don't know if this is another midlife crisis or some sort of crisis, but I enjoy the effort. And he seems to be getting something out of Ndombele as well, which it seemed like that relationship might have been ruptured earlier, but it's not. And he's been fantastic. The fullbacks have been great. Reguilon's been amazing. I think this team is clearly talented enough. Depth-wise, questions. But Bale makes a difference. Bale makes a difference, I think, as well because of the belief that he brings. And their fans... I can say this for myself. Like, that belief that you need to have, kind of, that things will be all right. I feel like Gareth Bale is kind of providing that. And it's something that maybe can lift Spurs to the top in a season where there isn't really a clear favorite. And I feel like it's going to be bunched up for a while. So I think they are legit.
And for a while with Tottenham, it just felt like they didn't have enough, you know, weapons in the armament and nothing was coming in to help them. They always made signings when everyone was injured. And then they had to go get Bergwijn and signings like that. And it felt like the roster is pretty strong, and then you added Bale to that, which is a feeling that I don't think Tottenham's had for a while of, oh, we're good, and now we're even better, and now we have depth, and now we have options, and Vinicius scores a few goals as well last week at center forward, so they can play. If Kane gets hurt, they can play him up there, they can play Son up there, they can play Bale. Like, they have options, and that's one of the things that I think is makes them interesting. I don't enjoy watching Jose Mourinho's teams play, but I think this is the model that he wants in a team. Like, he has the profile of player he wants across the field, and now they're starting to get these results, which I think will only add confidence, and you know that he understands how to push buttons, and the vibe in a locker room and the feel, all those things Devang's talking about, that's what Mourinho's an expert in, and I think this run of form will allow him to kind of set the tone for the year the way he wants it.
they're still good for some randomness, like the dropping a result to Antwerp in Europa League, and like not in the grand scheme of things, I don't think that really matters much. But as much as someone can be a contender this year, I think why not, right?
I just want to point out, as DeBank said, Jose Mourinho's Instagram account after that Europa League loss, just a picture of himself on the bus, and it says, "Bad performances deserve bad results. Hope everyone in this bus is as upset as I am tomorrow, 11 a.m. training."
Which was huge, because I don't think any player was notified when training was. So he had to put that memo out there for internal server use. Very helpful. Good job, Jose Mourinho.
Man manager.
Definitely. Canadian Jonathan David has struggled mightily with Lille. Is the pressure too high with his $32 million price tag?
So David missing a penalty kick in Europa League action last week, I think at Celtic. And I texted DeVang immediately. Both of you, when this happened, DeVang's like, "You're like the fourth person to text me." Someone texted me because now I'm like the Canadian guy in the US, which I love.
That's amazing.
I will be there soon, probably on Wednesday. And I don't know that that's the answer to this, but DeVang, you watch him play and you don't see special moments from him. He doesn't beat guys. He doesn't get openings. He's missed a few opportunities, but they're all things that came in the flow of play. And I'm not a Belgian Juniper League expert, but I watched him play at least in Europe last year, and he would create the game. He would break out. He was the energy, and you just don't see that for him at Lille. And I don't know if that's the pressure or if it's just a different style for him to fit into as not the only star player.
I think he was at 15 starts, 0 goals, 0 assists, 3 shots on target, 2 penalties missed. It's making waves in France as well, which I think is concerning. I saw the brain trust over at the club voice their support for Jonathan David, but it's a combination. I think you're right, David. Like the way they play, it's kind of like a floating, not really set style. And Victor Osimhen had an amazing season for them and went to Napoli for huge money. But I think they're maybe the Lille players are expecting Jonathan David to make those same movements when that's just not the case. And his ability to adapt hasn't been there yet, but the microscope is getting massive. And like, again, not a scientific barometer of anything, but you search Jonathan David and the tide is quickly turned into flop territory, which is a real shame. Like, there was no preseason. He's switching leagues. It's a big step, but obviously a fool's game to write anyone off at this point. I just wonder what the solution is. Is being on the bench better? Probably for a bit, right, David? Like, I don't know how you get out of this without playing, but then once you play and don't get the stat line results, what happens?
Yeah, it's tough. And it's tough because he's had different partners up top. There's experience in the, you know, in that front line. And he, at other times, he gets to lead the line. So it's tough because I think there's been a few different angles at it and there is no obvious reason right now. The reality of it is he's young and he's a goal scorer. And if he scores 2 goals in a week, the whole world's going to change. And I would just remind everyone that Victor Osimhen was, retread out of Germany, who was given up on and then became the guy who got sold from Lille to Napoli. Like, it happens very quickly. And I still think he's the same player that he was. I think the thing that stands out to me, I just don't see that explosion. And I don't know if that's physicality. Maybe he's not in shape the way he should and coronavirus affected that, or maybe he's hurt, or maybe that's all mental.
I also wonder, like, the fact that Lille is not really known as a buying club and, like, they broke the bank for him and they're usually the club that's selling to make a profit. The expectation that he's going to move on somewhere else and they'll make more money from that sale. There's levels to this.
Yeah, he was bought to be sold, right?
Right, right,
like,
right.
But Lille signed Renato Sanchez. Right. That was still about $18, $19 million because they expect to sell.
And if the concern is also that that might not happen, right? It can only increase the pressure.
Yeah, true.
He'll be okay, guys. He'll be okay. Man City, they retained the Women's FA Cup, beating Everton 3-1. Thank you for beating Everton. An American and Canadian connection, as both Sam Lewis and Janine Becky getting on the score sheet. Guys, what are your thoughts on this match?
Exciting game. It was just a massive day of sport on Sunday. Janine Becky, another great performance. It's funny, I feel like, so I was reading up on on the game and some post-match reports, and the fact that you do have like this big three in women's football, like Man City, Arsenal, and Chelsea have won all the silverware for six seasons in the domestic English game. And we've seen all of these moves and all these American, high-profile American players like Alex Morgan and Christian Press going to Manchester United. Like, it's interesting. There's Is this the early aughts, David? Is this the early aughts on the men's side of the Premier League where these new people came in and kind of shook things up? Because it looks like there will be more challenges at the top.
Yeah, I think so. And I think when you look at it, Man City's a great example of it. Like, Man City's built this incredible infrastructure, training grounds, but also just, you know, their fan network globally, all these things. And it just makes sense that if they are investing in the women's game, these teams are going to be big because the clubs are already big and the players are already superstars. So it's, you're just combining these two things. And as much as I love watching the NWSL, no one around the world knows who the North Carolina Courage are, but everyone knows who Man U is. Everyone knows who Man City is, Everton, all those things. So you bring Sammy Mewis into a Man City jersey and Rose Lavelle, or you put, you know, Alex Morgan in a Tottenham jersey, and it already clicks for a lot of people. And so I think the ability for it to accelerate is so quick and has so much potential. Now, it needs the investment, and that's something that is an issue across all soccer right now because of coronavirus and all those things. But I think this final gave you an example of, like, at Wembley, big game, big moment. And when you put all that quality on the field together, how entertaining, how exciting the game can be and how big of a moment it can feel like. And I thought that was a big one. And then the other for me is, I'm questioning how close NWSL is to these leagues. Is NWSL still ahead? Is it not? And so I think it's exciting, but it's also good to, for me to, like, see Mewis and Lavelle go over there and it be kind of not easy for them, but for them to be at the same level, to be like, oh, okay, this, they're still just the best players in the world. They don't just dominate NWSL. They can dominate anywhere.
Fun fact, on Saturday, I spent most of the day watching Bundesliga.
Nice. Wow.
Pretty much, yeah, all day. It was really entertaining. But just to keep David happy, we're going to talk about the Americans. And Josh Sargent, he scored his first Bundesliga goal of the season. Also, in Serie A, Weston McKennie, he looked really good playing for Juventus this weekend as well. Who is the shining American so far in Europe?
I think so far this season, it would be Gio Reyna to start at the 10 consistently and do what he does for Dortmund, even though they've had some struggles here and there. I think he's the one that has stood above. And obviously, I think Weston McKennie would be up there, but he had coronavirus and so had been laid off until this game. Tyler Adams injured as well. Dest has been in and out of the lineup. So I think Reyna is the one that stands above. This Weston McKennie performance, though, for Juve is interesting because I think you saw him almost probably at his best position, which is somewhere between an 8 and a 10. And I think Aaron Ramsey is a really good example at Juve, the way he plays, making late runs, covering a ton of ground, being an option, but not being that last pass true creator. I think McKennie filled in for that role for Ramsey a lot in the first half. And he looked really good. And I think that could be a good spot for him going forward.
That's it for headlines. When we come back, David and Devang dive headfirst into some MLS action.
Welcome back to a football podcast. MLS season almost in the books. Another topsy-turvy week for the former Supporters Shield leaders, Toronto FC, Wednesday falling to New York City FC 1-0. Dispirited performance from a really injury-plagued Toronto FC lineup. The midfield had some problems again that we've commented on in the past, but Greg Vanney was asked after the match how ravaged this team really is and how hard it's been to deal with them. I mean, this is coming off the back of a 5-0 loss to Philadelphia, so we'll play Greg's clip here.
We're trying to get guys healthy. We get guys healthy. We're very confident about what we're capable of doing. It's just where we are. I don't understand why people don't recognize that's where we are. We need to get our team back together, and we'll take anyone. Anyone that wants to come along, we'll play anyone. And that's where we're at right now, and that's what we're fighting to get back to. Our group is working their tails off. They put up a lot of crap this year. We're going to fight to get ourselves back healthy, and we're going for the trophy at the end of the day. That's what we're going to do. Any more questions?
It's a mad GV, David, and I think he was looking for a response from his team on Sunday against Inter Miami, against an Inter Miami side with a lot to play for themselves, trying to cling on to a playoff spot with their big guns now fully in tow. TFC escaped 2-1, a late Alejandro Pozuelo penalty, the difference. Wasn't pretty, David, but they found a way in some really tough conditions in Hartford.
Yeah, I think it's similar to the Atlanta game that we watched, which was not the soccer they wanted to play. Richie Larea is the difference in both of them. Even with all the injuries they've had, they still have enough pieces to get them over the top. Ayo Akinola gets the goal, which is just a huge player to have come back because they need that center forward option. And his strength creates the one goal. I mean, he's off the charts in some of the things he does. And I think still players, even with the scouting reports, are not prepared for what he can do, what he physically is like interacting with him on the field. And this is the type of games that Toronto's going to need to win, you know, that game and potentially the one coming up this weekend if they want to win the Supporter Shield. The season's condensed. They've got a ton of injuries. It's all chaos. It's not what you plan for. It doesn't really have to look a specific way. So I wasn't too down on this, but I think Greg Vanney's comments are just frustration for him. Toronto has shown depth probably better than any team in MLS. And I think we talked about it on the show last week or a week or two ago, Devang, about this might be the deepest team Toronto's ever had, even with the success they had in 15 and 16 and since then. And I think he still is like, I can't catch a break. I can't put a lineup out there. I don't really think he's choosing teams at this point, Devang. I think he just puts out what he has.
It's true. And that being said, like, I think he learned from what didn't work against New York City FC on Sunday. So they started Frazier and Bradley together midweek, and they were basically playing the same position, which didn't make either of them look really good. And I know I saw a lot of comments saying that Frazier looked poor and the stats didn't reflect well on him, but I thought once he actually played like his position, he was fine. So the insertion of Ralph Friso beside Bradley, a completely different profile player, a completely different kind of player in the midfield, someone more in that Oso vein who can get out of traffic easier, was a huge difference. And I can understand why Greg wanted to sign Friso earlier, because he's clearly ready. Like, I was super impressed by him as well, David.
A guy at that age, at that position, the way he came and wanted the ball and like you said, was able to get out of tight spaces. Like, a lot of times young players, they're fine, but they don't want to initiate the game. They don't want to do too much because they're nervous. And he didn't show that at all. And I agree with you. I was completely impressed by what he did in this game and the impact he brought. And it gave that change of pace. And we've seen over the course of this year a lot of different midfields for Toronto. I think the best one is when Osorio and Delgado are the two in that deeper position, both offensively and defensively, but especially playing out of the back. But to your point with Frazier, him and Bradley take up the same positions, and Bradley just dominates the play of game. Like, Toronto, I think the players innately, you just want to give him the ball. He's loud. He knows what's going on, all those things, and you need other identities out there to fix things, and that's what they had in this game. And it was a big result, and it was a big result coming off seeing Philly lose to Columbus, right? Like, to know mentally that it was out there, that it was available, that made it a playoff game, and I thought they stepped up.
It's a great segue to the reason why the Supporters Shield race is still on, and it is that 2-1 result that Columbus got. Eloy Arum, fantastic in goal. Columbus really fielding, David, maybe their best or most fit lineup they've had in weeks, and if this is their best 11, you can understand why this was the team to beat maybe a couple months ago, and why they were in the conversation with TFC and Philadelphia as the best team of the East. It was a good performance from them.
This was a team that I picked to win the MLS back tournament, and I think I had them second in the East coming into the year for the reason that you said, when their pieces are out there, it all makes sense. It all fits together the right way. Everyone does different things. The problem has been when not everyone's healthy, especially Zellerán and Nagbe. I think Porter's a little too strict in what he does, and he tries to find like-for-like changes instead of changing what he does because he doesn't have those players. But then Zellerán and Nagbe come back in the team, and this game was awesome. I thought this was a playoff game. The atmosphere, the speed, the willingness for the two teams to come out and try and win it and not want to lose it. This was one of the best games. I think this is the best game I've seen all MLS regular season, especially since the coronavirus layoff. So it was a big moment. And the reason Philly lost it, a lot of it comes down to Andre Blake being injured, Jose Martinez being injured. And those two guys aren't going to be back this weekend. And so the door is open for Toronto to win the Supporters Shield.
I feel for Joe Bendik. We have a history with Joe Bendik in Toronto. But that blunder is the reason why that door is open. He's going to have to put it together for that last game, like you mentioned, David, Philadelphia has against New England. They're unbeaten at home, but they came into this match with the opportunity to finally get that trophy, and they were unable to do it. And I think psychologically now, we go into this decision day with all of the pressure on Philadelphia. They have most of the tiebreakers, but they need a result, pretty much. That's it. Win and they're done. How confident are you? I mean, I think this is still done. I have less faith in TFC possibly getting a result against the Red Bulls than I do of Philadelphia dropping points, because I think they are that good at home. But do you think they're shaken enough, perhaps, to drop?
I think they are, and I think there isn't that big a margin for them. I don't think they dominate teams, and I don't think they're in a place where they can say, we lost the best goalkeeper in the league, we've lost the best defensive midfielder in the league this year. I think both of those are a fact for Philly, and we can still cruise. Now, they have depth, they have pieces. I thought Jack Elliott was good in central midfield, but I just don't think Philly walked into that game 4 goals better than New England and then had an injury, and it was like, okay, fine, we'll still win. It just won't be as dominating, and that changes everything. And you're looking at a New England team that wants to stay with a home game, so they have some things to play for. We don't know exactly how the schedule is going to roll out, but you'd assume they're playing for a bye as well in that first round. So I think this is a competitive game. And I thought last week it wasn't over either, going into the Columbus game, and they made mistakes and they lost. And Philly's MO has been failing at that final step. They've lost 4 Open Cup finals, 3 of which were at home. This is what Philly's ethos has been, and I think it's a different group, and I think they've exercised some of those demons in the big win against Toronto, but it all still exists, and it all still is there. And like you said, Toronto, I think, is going to play fairly carefree. They just need to get through this game, get a result, and then get into the rest, and they're just hoping that they get the result from Philly rather than the expectations.
The tire fire that is the LA Galaxy emerged from the rubble with 3 points against the equally bad RSL. Dominic Kinnear back in action as the interim. David, a masterclass from Christian Pavone, described as a one-man counter. I think that's pretty fair. RSL, also not very good. I saw Justin Miram lose it on Jim Harbaugh following Michigan's loss on Saturday, and I knew it was a bad omen for what was going to happen to RSL later. David, we talked about the Galaxy a lot, and we'll get to them shortly, but RSL, I think, was one of those clubs, if you're on the East Coast, if you're not totally keyed in week to week with MLS, they might get lost in the periphery. You know, Beckerman, you know, it's a storied franchise, but everything that's gone on off the pitch with the owner, and just a really bad season overall. You've had numerous instances of really bad press, like PR wise, where does this club really go from here? I feel like they're kind of up against the wall at this point.
Yeah, there's no answer until you have a new owner, and that owner decides who they want the club to be and what they're going to put together. One of the big names that was expected to bid on the team just bought the Utah Jazz from the Miller family, who was another group that was expected to bid on the team. So that may have put both of them more into play if they're trying to, I think it's the Qualtronics founder who's trying to maybe build a sports empire, or the Miller family is out of basketball but still wants to own a team. I don't know. It would be unfortunate, though, if this takes a while, because I like some of the pieces in this group. Like, I think Freddy Juarez is a good coach who's connected with the team. They've bought through so many players from their USL team and their academy, but you need the piece or two that it's all built around. We saw this with Columbus 2 years ago. Precourt spent years ripping that team apart. And the first year they put some pieces together and it was like, this team's not that good. Then you drop Zellerion and Nagby in, and they're the second or third best team in the league because they built around. And then you spend big for those positions that in MLS, you just need to spend big on a 9. You need to have an elite center back, and you need to have one dominant player in central midfield. And so I think RSL has those pieces around it if they can stick the big ones in the middle. But it's Salt Lake City. It's not a huge market. And so the ownership's really going to decide a lot of that going forward.
Galaxy coaching rumors heating up hot, if that is a phrase. I'm making it one now. Robbie Keane. We mentioned that briefly on this show, which would be, I think, it'd be good for the Bants, but probably a disaster. But Greg Vanney, David, interesting name to hear in this conversation. He's in negotiations with TFC for a new deal. Brian Schmelzer in Seattle also up for a new contract. Think Keane is the guy?
I have no idea. I would think that... So I have a lot of confidence, I've said this on the show before, in Dennis DeClosa, even with the struggles they've had, his ability to manage an organization, his foresight. I don't think Robbie Keane is in any way a sure thing as a coach. And so I think Dennis DeClosa will go with a quote-unquote safer option, but I could be totally wrong. And that's one of the things that's tough with the Galaxy is... they haven't really run themselves as a well-run organization over the last few years. So it's hard to have confidence in that moment. But I'm going to, for now, say that I believe they're going to go a little bit smarter and either go with one of these proven MLS coaches. I said the name Gonzalo Pineda last week when this opening came. The assistant at Seattle, former Liga MX star, Mexican national team player, started in a World Cup, played in MLS, and now has been the assistant at Seattle over the course of these trophies that they've won and finals that they've made over the last 4 years. That one makes a lot of sense to me, and I think he's ready to be a head coach. But part of the Brian Schmetzer negotiation might be that Seattle's already decided he's their next head coach. And so Brian Schmetzer is the one who will be available. I don't know, but I think those options are safer, and I think they make more sense for the Galaxy.
That Greg Vanney quote talking about injuries and basically doing what they can. I think Seattle's an interesting case study of a team not really squad rotating much at all, and now finding themselves in a situation where their midfield is run into the ground and they're not really getting results. They lost to Colorado, the resurgent Rapids, who can now play again and on points per game will be in the playoffs comfortably. I was surprised, David, a bit by the result, but then I watched the game and I think a team can look gassed and you could maybe call it, oh, it's a one-off performance and we don't need to read too much into it, but I thought I was a bit shocked by a team that I anointed as the clear favorite in the West many times this season. I surprised to see them where they were at.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And at the same time, you give credit to Colorado. I think they finally got the rust off from the COVID layoff, but you saw a little bit of that energy because they haven't played that much soccer and they're young. So they have a lot of pieces that can put pressure on you and they're effective in set pieces, which if you can play from a lead, it makes the game so much easier. I still think Seattle will be fine. They have a ton of depth. They have that experience in big moments, and they have guys who can just win you the game, even if you're missing a piece or two. If you look at it, most likely whoever clinches first or second is going to get a week or two layoff going into the playoffs, and I think it'll be huge for a team like Seattle.
Doesn't matter what's going to happen. It is inevitable. TFC Seattle MLS Cup. Let's stop kidding ourselves. We know what's on the cards.
Because we're having this conversation and I hadn't really thought about it this way. Is the LA Galaxy the job? Like, if you're a coach, Greg Vanney, an example, you know, he played there. I think he's from Southern California, but he's head coach of Toronto FC with the success they've had and the relevance they have in that market. Is Galaxy a job you leave for? Because that's the big job still in MLS?
The first thing that came to my mind, to be honest, was the continued attempts by the New York Knicks to try and get Masai Ujiri out of Toronto. Because, like, New York is the mecca, it's NYC, it's the iconic franchise, you get it. And I think the Galaxy are probably the Knicks or one of the standard, like, the iconic teams of this league, right? So maybe on that parallel it makes sense, but then you also look at the situation Greg's got and the situation Masai's got in Toronto's pretty great, right? And I think Greg would say the same there, but I wonder if the Galaxy still have that much pull because things don't look super great on the outside, and I wonder if the LAFC thing also maybe takes a bit of a luster off that job as a destination spot or like a something you have to check off on your to-do list as a manager.
It just doesn't seem like a better job to me than being
head
coach.
Though, right? It's not. I don't think it is.
Toronto or Atlanta or Seattle, like, you're getting as good of players there as you would get in the other places. And your market relevance is high. You know, the fans care. The environments are good. It just doesn't seem like, oh, that's a must-take job. Correction, Greg Vanney, not from Southern California, but went to UCLA and then obviously played pro there for a long time. So he has firm roots in that area, which I understand for him specifically, but I was asking in general, and I agree with you. I think the Galaxy are a name, but I don't think it's something that you...
10 years ago, sure. 5 years right. ago, sure. It's a different league, right?
Like if Robin Fraser, yeah. if it came up for Robin Fraser, you'd understand. Okay, the Colorado 100%. Rapids are not a big team in MLS, and Peter Vermes obviously isn't going anywhere, but I think there are other big teams outside of that city at this point.
And I think the other thing is the fact that Greg was involved with the academy at TFC, like his fingerprints are involved in a lot of stuff at the club. And I think that's something he's proud of. And that's something he has to consider if he was to leave, right? So that's another vote in TFC's favor, but it's a great bargaining chip. Hey, if I'm his agent, yeah. you'd smoke him while you got him, as the saying goes. Quick hits. It turns out Montreal not having a number 9 or any sort of attacking threat in their midfield was going to be a problem, but I think they're done, David. Like, they'll make the playoffs, but I'm ready mm-hmm. to kind of call it on them. Whereas NYCFC, with the guys they got going, with Maxi healthy, it's a ring, that ring rocket against Red Bulls. NYCFC is going on a totally different track to Montreal. Like, I think NYCFC is a team you definitely don't want to play, like we've said, if you're Toronto or Philly or Columbus early.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And it looks like NYCFC is probably going to sneak into that fifth spot, maybe the fourth spot over Orlando or Columbus this weekend, although I doubt it. But I agree with you. I think they're starting to hit Tati Castellanos' hat trick this weekend. I think there are a few players in this league that can come off the bench and do something like that.
The neck tattoo makes this so difficult because he's clearly an important player. But I was going through it on Wednesday night watching that game, and I've seen it before. He's always involved in the play. You know, and for better or for worse, he's in it. He's in the action. I appreciate that as an opponent. I also appreciate how he gets under his opponent's skin. That seems to work well.
Yeah, his balance, his ability on the ball, his finishing. I mean, he can play outside, he can play inside. He's huge, and that's what NYCFC has done so well. They've lost Eber and James Sands for the season, and it's next guy up for them. And there aren't a lot of teams in MLS that have that depth or could do that at the highest level. I still don't think they're as good as the top four teams in the East on paper. Matchups are always different, so I still don't have them as favorites. I don't expect to see them in the Eastern Conference Finals. But I agree with you in that they are the team, maybe New England in there as well, that if you're a team in those top four spots, you're like, if I could, I would love to avoid them as long as possible.
Shouts to Gary Mackay-Steven. Love that player. Love watching him play for New York City FC. That is it, I think. It's decision day on Sunday, of course. Massive day. There's games on Wednesday as well as some teams catch up to finish off their games. But a lot on the line, as we mentioned, the supporter shield, of course, being the biggest thing. David, we got to go out of this segment, but I ask for it now. I think you kind of alluded to it, but what is your pick? Who is going to walk away with it?
I think it'll be Toronto in the
wow.
end.
Wow. Unbelievable.
I'm not questioning Philly as a club.
I just need to report live scenes from outside my window right now. The metallic structure of the David Goss statue is being erected right now. A tear to your eye. Amazing. Amazing scenes.
Yeah, it's tough for Philly. I just think Blake's a huge loss. I think Martinez is a huge loss. I think this is a dangerous Revs team. And I think right now there's something in Philly's head coming off the Columbus loss. But if they win it, it's going to be an epic moment for Philly. If they get the job done, not backing into it, but getting a victory at home to get it done, it'll be impressive. It'll be a huge moment for the club.
I was reading something today. It was mostly about the election, where it's like if you purposely are pessimistic about something to protect yourself from feeling bad when it happens, you just feel doubly bad because you never really believed in that pessimistic thought in the first place. So I'm going to say Toronto will win. Yeah,
that.
Toronto will do it. Toronto will do it. New England Revolution, we might have a player from that team on once they help us do that as well next week. But
we'll work for it.
Next week's all going to be we're going to be all MLS, all Decision Day recap next week. Join us then. Should be an exciting weekend to say the least. After the break, we wrap up with the mailbag. It's Ask AFP.
Welcome back to a football podcast. It is now time for everyone's favorite mailbag segment, Ask AFP. Thanks to everyone who sent their questions this week. If you didn't get the chance to send in your own questions, just hop on Twitter and use the hashtag AskAFP and send them our way. Our first question goes to Travis, and he asks, who is your all-time MLS villain?
That is a great question, Travis. Let's get out in front of this, everyone's going to say Carlos Ruiz. Carlos Ruiz is a legend. El Pescadito is I consider a personal friend. He doesn't know who I am, but it doesn't matter. And so I won't allow that to stand, but that would be the first thing most people would say. Steven Lenart's the other. I've got two other ones that pop out for me. One is Mark Birch, who didn't play at the highest level, but he was like a grade A S talker. And anyone on the field knows that. And he kind of always annoyed me in watching him play. So that was one that popped into my head. And then the other big one that I was going to say was, wow, I just blanked. But I think Fabian Espíndola is a good one. Oh, and Francisco Calvo. Even though Calvo like does it to his own team, he's just like on his own plane of chaos that he has to go into a conversation like this.
Excellent picks. I'm going to go Alan Gordon, just based on Alan Gordon scoring some hilariously soul-crushing goals seemingly all the time, no matter where he went, which is almost everywhere in MLS. And Connor Casey, kind of for that same reason. Like, these guys are like hitmen.
Con man.
Like, they show up at places seemingly out of nowhere and bag 10 to 15 goals to piece out. I respected that. Heartbreak. A lot of random heartbreak provided by them. And I liked Gordo when he was in Toronto as well, in the real dark times, but seemed like a good guy.
Connor Casey, he didn't show up out of nowhere. He rolled up in his Dodge Durango, you know, with the mud flaps going. He knew exactly where he was coming from.
It's the cool stepdad who will take you out for a beer and beat you. I don't know. Yeah.
I'm surprised nobody mentioned Jermaine Defoe.
Oh, wow.
The bloody big deal.
I thought you were going to say Jermaine Jones.
No.
Which definitely would have.
That might work. That might work as well.
Yes.
I don't know who he's against or for, but he was chaos at his best in MLS.
David Bingham for just playing. Being played in the Galaxy, I think, in general, that should be a villainous
agreed
thing.
I think I would say most of these answers come down to center forwards, right?
Yeah, personal gripes. People who have took my heart out of my chest through a late winner.
Will Johnson's probably on this list pretty high as well.
Oh, yeah.
Both for on and off field things he's done.
I think Gilberto would agree with me that Jermaine Defoe is a villain. Next goes Matt V from Patreon. He asks, do TFC need to move on from both Michael Bradley and Jozy Altidore?
I don't think so. Obviously, the hot conversation after those two defeats was like the midfield is poor and Michael's having a bit of a tough time coming back from injury. But he's clear, like, Michael and Jozy aren't the players they were a few years ago, and that's just how life works. Like, that's not a shock. Can they still be important players for this team currently that can win? For sure, 100%. I think the problem with Wednesday game, I thought, against New York City was that it was just a really unbalanced midfield, and they cannot play that way with Michael and Liam together. It just doesn't work, and I think Greg realized that, and if they have the players with them, they won't need to resort to that. I don't think they're part of the problem at TFC. They're part of what has been good, so I don't think they have to move on. But the question is, I think, David, it's like if Greg's in a situation where he can either play Michael or Liam, and you have to ask if it's who's the best option for your club, I think they still believe it's Michael Bradley, and I don't think I'm comfortable saying Liam is the better option yet, so I'm going to say do not move on.
I would agree with you. I think they're two different conversations because Michael Bradley now is on a TAM deal. Is he a TAM level player in MLS? Yeah, he still is. Jozy Altidore, when healthy, is still a DP in MLS. He can still dominate the game. He can do things at his level that Michael can no longer do at his level. But there's expectations with that money. So I don't know how you can move on from Jozy Altidore. Like, I don't know that anyone in MLS takes his contract from you. And I don't know that you can sell him internationally at this point and at this age, but I'm less worried about him because I still see it when he's healthy. It's just all about getting him healthy. For Michael, I agree that he's still an MLS starter. I think Jonathan Osorio and Marky Delgado are better than him. You have those players on your roster, so you don't have to worry about, well, what's our best starting team? You have that group. When they're healthy, so you don't need Michael Bradley to be the guy. But we didn't discuss in the coaching situation if General Bradley's ready to take over, Greg Fanny might just be out. I mean, I don't know that he has much choice.
Player coach.
Make Bradley coach, get that TAM money freed up, and move on from there.
Cameron from Patreon asks, which current player do you think will write the best book after retirement?
This is a great question. I am a person who really likes travel and cultures and things like that. So, you know, my answer is going to go down to Pa Motoka, who speaks 9 languages and has played in every single continent around the world, because I like players like that. So I'm going to go with that one, even though he's not a current player. I don't really care. Is that fair?
That's fair. Mine's not. I think I was going to pick Lukas Podolski, because I think he...
Oh, nice.
The condition is that these guys are writing it themselves, so there's minimal ghostwriting involved, and the ghostwriter is there to make it grammatically correct. But if the player is actually writing it themselves, I like to talk to Lukas Podolski and read his book. Seems like a guy who lives life correctly, and he's been to some cool places. He's obviously been in Germany a bunch, but like Japan and Turkey and all over the place. So I'll pick him.
I would say anyone who legitimately played at Fenerbahce or Galatasaray or Besiktas, I would love to know that experience. 100%. So if you could well write me into that.
If you know what? Atiba is a great shout as well. I mean, to become a legend of a club like that, right? Like, you'd love to hear the inside story.
Is he fluent in Turkish now? Does he do that?
He's got to
be.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Cameron
also brought up that he thought Zlatan would probably have the best book, and I agree with him in that one.
It would all be written in the third person, exactly. Like a marketing ploy.
Dumb, like, that was simultaneous double heat from Mr. Goss and myself. Yeah. Like, watch out.
That's how you know it's real.
Yeah.
All
right.
No, but you never know, like, what's his perspective having a conversation with someone, because he's so... I don't want to say full of himself, but that's the only word that's coming to my mind.
Exactly. So imagine reading that in book form. Like, what would it be? What would it just be? Platitudes? And like,
I think so.
Keep calm and carry on type sayings, but in Zlatan prose. I think that's what it would be.
One of the things that could be interesting, though, in coming away from my MLS brain and going towards what Devang said, is a player who's like been at a lot of big clubs, but been on the outs. Because I'd love to know how each club manages the, like, yeah, we're like not that into you. Like, what is every conversation Michy Batshuayi has with Chelsea like? What was Fernando Torres's experience like leaving all these big clubs where people were like, we're so glad to have you. And then 3 months later, we're like, can we get you out the door? Like, is there somewhere else? I would love to know the like inner workings of those human dynamics.
So Mesut Ozil's book is your answer. Okay.
Exactly.
Finally, Rob asks, who's the most informed central defender in the world right now?
Clearly, it's Gabriel Magalhães from Arsenal. Awesome. Gabriel's up there, guys. I'm not even quote unquote taking the piss.
You're not allowed to say an Arsenal player. Give a real answer.
I have to give myself 3 seconds to think, David. So
I would just say the only reason this is a question is because Van Dijk's injured. Like, he is on a level on his own, and Koulibaly, because Napoli has fallen off, his performances have struggled over the last 6 months, so he's not that guy anymore. I still say, amazingly, David Alaba probably can do everything you want from a center back and has not put a foot wrong, except for the fact that he wants to make more money.
That contract discussion seems to be going fantastic.
Absolutely. Bayern's really killing it on that front. So I think he has to go into any conversation like this. And obviously winning Champions League is a big one for him. And Sergio Ramos.
Sergio Ramos, you got the get out of jail free card. Well done. Who is the best center back right now in the Premier League with VVD out? Probably Alderweireld maybe, and Tottenham. Or
it's a good question.
And so it's wide open is what I'm saying. What my... I'm trying to lead you into, I'm baiting you into agreeing that I think it's wide open.
Oh, that it's Magalhães?
And it's Gabriel is up there. He's up there, man. Arsenal has the best defensive record in the league, and they've played Liverpool, City, and United away from home already. I think that's something.
It's obviously crazy. Yerry Mina. That's why Everton's going to win the league.
Oh, my God. The disrespect.
Michael Keane and Yerry Mina are sharing Defender of the Year award.
The other two names for globally, by the way, that always have to get thrown in, because if you play center back for Atletico Madrid, you get mentioned, is Jose Jimenez and Savic, who are both phenomenal individually and as a group.
I just want to say that I had to turn on a light while you guys were talking so I could open this pack, because I cannot see anything because it's Damn daylight savings.
It's nighttime.
Half the CVs in Serie A as well, because we'll get yelled at if we don't mention that. There's like eight.
What, for center back?
Yeah.
No, because no one's played at that level. Benucci's not there. Chiellini's hurt. De Vrij, maybe.
De Ligt, not yet.
Well, no, De Ligt doesn't even start. Yeah. No, I don't think anyone's performed at a high enough level in Serie A.
What's in the pack, sir?
Oh, man. So definitely have to move on from last week's, which was really abysmal. You guys didn't know who any of them were. And it was a horrible segment. So hopefully we move on to better pastures today.
Let's go. Drum roll.
All right. We actually have a reoccurring player here. We already pulled the best card in the deck. And now we pulled him again, except non-holographic, Roberto Baggio.
Hey. Oh, so we've got the pair.
We do.
That's how you get the money.
He has a beautiful mullet.
We can go to the Poke Gym and win this Pokemon battle. Yes. Double Baggio.
And then pretty much nobody else, except I wanted to name this guy because his name is cool. Goran Sloroth from Norway.
It's a perfect ending. It's a perfect pronunciation from Nick. I'm sure he got that 100% right. Bang. Great pack. Baggio again. Serendipity on this very, yes, it's dark. Leicester is one, just to close that loop off. Second in the league now.
Behind Liverpool. Just saying.
He gets the final word, as it should be. That's it for this week's episode of A Football Podcast. A reminder, a rating or a review of the show would be incredible, and it would help us get this pod into more people's ears. We are on Twitter, @AFootballPod, as well as on patreon.com/AFootballPodcast. Get this show ad-free. Join us on Discord. More interviews coming soon. For Nick, David, and myself, thank you so much for listening to AFP. We'll talk to you soon.